Is same-sex kissing cheating? This is the question comedian and YouTuber Anna Akana posed in a recent YouTube video. The scenario? Akana, a woman in a heterosexual relationship, agreed to kiss her female friend while the two were drunk at a party. Struck with the realization that her actions could constitute cheating, she rushed to her boyfriend and spilled the story, asking him if the fun she had shared with her female friend was actually cheating. Akana's boyfriend was seemingly unfazed and replied nonchalantly with,
"Oh yeah, babe, it's totally fine. That kind of thing happens at parties, as long as it's not a guy, because then it would be cheating."
Akana then turned to her viewers, prompting them to think about why exactly this is okay. Akana's specific situation is, I believe, important to take into account. She is a straight woman in a heterosexual relationship with a straight man, and the woman she kissed was a close friend, also straight, who, according to Akana, she had no romantic feelings for. I wonder how the reaction of Akana's boyfriend or the situation as a whole might have been different if Akana, her boyfriend, or her friend did not identify as heterosexual. After watching Akana's video, I found myself considering the questions she raised. Why is kissing between female friends engaged in heterosexual relationships not necessarily viewed as cheating? What role does gender play in the way we define a romantic or sexual encounter? What does this mean about the way we view relationships between women, friendships and otherwise? To answer these questions, I turn to history. Between Women is a 2007 book by Sharon Marcus that focuses on female relationships in Victorian England, specifically within the time frame of the 1830s to the 1880s, and is the main source of evidence used in this segment. Unless otherwise noted, all quotes used are Marcus's words and all information presented is based on Marcus's writing. Throughout her book, Marcus argues that in Victorian England, female friendships were not only accepted by society, but were encouraged. In a society where marriage was an ultimate goal for women, I assumed that friendships between women, which I thought might have been seen as a site for distracting women from their families or their domestic duties, would be looked down upon or discouraged. This, however, as Marcus makes clear, was not the case. Female friendship and marriage coexisted in harmony. Friendship between women was not simply limited to young, unmarried women. Women often sustained their friendships with other women throughout their married lives. Engaged and married women felt no conflict in loving both their fiancés or husbands and their friends. Female friendship was accepted and respected by men, quote, as a component of family life for wives and mothers, unquote. Women's friendship was not seen in opposition to marriage, but rather as complementary and even beneficial to marriage. According to Marcus, one reason female friendship was seen as valuable was because of the belief that, quote, friendship between women cultivated the feminine virtues of sympathy and altruism, unquote, which ultimately led to women becoming better wives. Female friendship was a central element of femininity for middle-class women in Victorian England. It was deeply woven into the tapestry of female life as a site for fostering proper femininity. Despite the fact that one of Marcus's central arguments is that female friendship served heterosexual marriage and traditional gender roles, Marcus also calls attention to the fact that the friendships women shared created spaces where gender expectations and limits could be forgotten. Female friendship granted Victorian women opportunities to shed some of the gender constraints that bound them without harming the perception of their femininity or respectability. Friendship allowed women to take control in their social lives, whereas women were conditioned to be passive in their relationships with men. Their relationships with female friends were free range and provided a site for women to be active participants in the relationship. Although it was seen as improper for women to pursue men, it was perfectly acceptable for women to initiate friendship with one another. One way in which women applied their ability to exercise power in their relationships with each other was by exchanging various gifts, trinkets, and tokens of affection, such as personal poems or portraits. Emily Shore wrote of a lock of hair she received from her friend Elizabeth, and the satisfaction the gift brought her.
I have generally worn a pretty little chain of bought hair, and when people ask me, "Whose hair is that?" I have been mortified at being obliged to answer, "Nobody's." Now, when asked the same question, I shall be able to say it is the hair of my best and dearest friend.
The language women used to describe their feelings for each other offered another way for women to take a stance of power in their social lives by actively pursuing and declaring affection for a friend. Women frequently described the feelings they shared with their female friends as love. This resulted in the blurring of the lines between platonic love and romantic love. As Marcus points out, quote, "One of the most striking differences between Victorian and 20th century friendship is how often Victorian friends used love interchangeably with expressions such as fond of or like," unquote. Charlotte Young wrote of the love she shared with her childhood friend, Anne.
"The great love of all of our lives was getting to be conscious. Anne and I were always together. We wanted to walk about with our arms round each other's waists. I remember a long walk round Kitley Point. We gathered bluebells in the ecstasy of childhood among flowers, exchanged our finest clustering stems of blue, and felt our hearts go out to one another. At least I did. So entirely that, a white bluebell still brings to me that dear Anne and that old love. My dear, dear Anne, whom I loved always with all of my heart."
The intensity of the language Young used and the manner in which she wrote so passionately about her feelings for Anne would probably be considered romantic by modern readers. In addition to the liberal usage of the word love by Victorian women, it was also ordinary for women to share physical intimacy with their female friends, even to the extent of kissing each other on the lips. In fact, women wrote plainly about caressing and kissing their female friends. Emily Shore, the proper and respectable young woman who received the lock of hair from her friend Elizabeth, wrote in her diary an account of visiting with another friend, Miss Warren, in Miss Warren's bedroom.
"She was sitting up in bed, looking so sweet and lovely that I could not take my eyes off her. She made me sit on her bed, kissed me many times, was kinder to me than ever, and held my hand clasped in hers."
As surprising as it might be to modern listeners, experiences like Shore's encounter with Miss Warren were not out of the ordinary for female friends. In fact, writings similar to Shore's were commonly read by the author's spouses and families without the bat of an eye. Despite the intimate physical contact female friends shared and the passionate language they used to illustrate their feelings for each other, women in these relationships defined themselves as friends, not as lovers. Taking our knowledge of the social norms surrounding female friendship in Victorian England, let us now step back into the 21st century for a moment and think about how these Victorian social conventions apply to the questions raised by Anna Akana. Is kissing between female friends cheating? Can two women share the physical intimacies typically reserved for lovers while still maintaining a strictly platonic relationship? Consider the friendship of Emily Shore and Miss Warren, who kissed as friends, not as lovers, Or think back to the assertion that engaged or married women felt no conflict in loving both their fiancés or husbands and their friends. In the end, whether or not one considers same-sex kissing between straight friends to be cheating comes down to personal discretion. However, as we have learned, in a Victorian setting, Anna Akana's mouth-to-mouth encounter with her friend would have been well within the boundaries of typical female friendship. This episode of Jessica Talks was sponsored by History 2708. Special thanks to Emily Bruce, Nick Honer, Annie Brandt, and Kate Folkman. Music credit to Katy Perry's I Kissed a Girl and Eugen Doga's My Sweet and Tender Beast. Thank you for listening. Catch you next time on Jessica Talks.